Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 157, The Stupid Hammer Ruined It. We got two segments for you this week, but they're both what we've been playing. First up, Alex C. and Alex O. are joined by John, and they talk about a bunch of games they've been playing. And after that, Neil and Zach talk about a bunch of games they've been playing. So, we've been playing a lot of games. Enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new segment of Nintendo World Report Connectivity. I am your host, Alexander Kalafi, and joining me for a brand new edition of what we have been playing, Alex Osborne.
Hey guys.
And Jonathan Rairdon, am I pronouncing that right?
You are, but it's just John. You failed in an interesting way.
So your birth name is not Jonathan. It was literally okay, perfect. And the interesting thing about both of these new crew members is that they are, in fact, crew members. And although Alex joined us on our Nintendo Direct live podcast on video last week, which you can find on our Nintendo World Report TV channel, this is both of their first times on an audio connectivity podcast, and hopefully not the last. So, before we begin, before we say what we've been playing, what we've been talking about, I want to hear a little bit about you. Alex, what is your role on staff, and what do you do for us?
So I am basically one of the news guys. So that's kind of my thing anyway. I'm kind of an interesting gamer in that I spend probably more time researching the industry and just kind of keeping up to date on all the latest games rather than actually playing them. I get more enjoyment out of combing through interviews and press releases than and playing a lot of games. So I'm kind of an anomaly in that sense, but that's kind of my way.
And we should note that, so you're more into the cult of industry. So you're more into the whole, not necessarily NeoGAF, but that general gaming industry scene.
Totally.
And we should also note that you are on another website, Game Revolution. Am I saying that right?
That's correct. That's my full-time gig.
Okay. And you do that, and that's completely multi-platform.
We cover everything over there.
Okay, that's good. So we got a balance, guys.
But Nintendo mm-hmm. does hold a special place in my heart, though.
I can tell, because before you were on staff here, nearly every conversation we had ever had on Twitter was about Nintendo stuff. So there you go. John, you have a very specialized role on staff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I was brought on when Neil and the guys were starting up the Nintendo World Report TV YouTube channel. And I was just brought on, having some experience doing YouTube, to just create videos. And of course, I also help out with news and reviews and stuff, but my main focus is that YouTube channel.
Right. It's one thing you'll learn as you get into staff here is that everyone starts off with some kind of specialty. Like you, Alex, when I started back in 2012, I was primarily news, primarily making sure we get content out. But as we went on, we all found our specialties. I got into previews, and then I got into editorials, and I got into podcasts. And then, John, you found your specialty early, but you'll probably find other stuff. And then, Alex, I'm sure you'll find other stuff to call your own. You seem like the kind of guy who will get into industry analysis stuff.
Absolutely. You know me too well already.
That's true, but the thing is, you learn a lot about someone just by hearing them talk about video games for 45 minutes, as we will do right now. So the way what we've been playing works is, as many of our listeners know, we talk about the video games we've been playing. And to show these fine gentlemen how it's done, I will start. I have not been playing a Nintendo game this week. Instead, I have been playing a game that many people thought was going to come to a Nintendo system, but ultimately did not. And the game I am talking about is Call of Duty Advanced Warfare on the PlayStation 4. Some of you who are not into Call of Duty may say, hey man, it's just another Call of Duty game, and you would be absolutely right. However, this Call of Duty is interesting in that it is the first one developed by Sledgehammer Games. Normally, Call of Duty runs on a 2-year cycle. Each Call of Duty game takes 2 years to make. And the studio is, it alternates between our Treyarch and Infinity Ward. So the Modern Warfare games, Modern Warfare 1, Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3, those are all made by Infinity Ward. On the games that came between those, Call of Duty World at War, Call of Duty Black Ops, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, those were made by Treyarch. And that's why every single year you play a Call of Duty, If you do play Call of Duty games, you'll notice that they change a little, and that's because there were two developers. Now there are three. This is Sledgehammer Games' first full foray at bat. And Sledgehammer Games made a pretty impressive debut, in my opinion. It is still a first-person shooter. It is still a game where you shoot guys with guns, and it is still Modern Warfare, generally. Except now this time, there are exosuits, which are basically double-jumping mechanics. You can jump over cars and stuff, you can do some hover stuff, you can hover across gaps, you have shields, you have weapons that... I wouldn't say they're full-on Halo weapons, but they're definitely more modernized guns, like the AKs have special sights that can track enemies, there's heat-seeking things, there are grenades that will actually actively search people out. And the difference between this Call of Duty versus other Call of Duties is that now the game is much more mobile, and it's the kind of mobility you may be familiar with if you have played Titanfall, which is on Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC, or you have played... I think Destiny, which has its own little, it has its double jump, it has its hover, and it has all this other stuff. So that is what Call of Duty does. The other big thing, the only thing I will add is that the story mode has Kevin Spacey, and the story mode is really good this time around because it focuses on America 50 years from now, and it develops a really cool, realistic portrayal of what the modern world will look like. For instance, you got things like New Baghdad, which is like the Baghdad of the past, but Kevin Spacey's super militaristic company of PMCs came in and then turned that shit around in 5 years and basically made it the new New York City. And then it's got all these weapons, it's got all this modern Metal Gear Rising type private military stuff, and then Kevin Spacey basically plays his character from House of Cards. So
good old Frank it's Underwood. Pretty dope.
Good old Frank Underwood. I'm excited for season three. Alex, what were you saying?
Well, I just was curious because I know everyone sort of, they approach Call of Duty in different ways. Like for me, I haven't played all of them. It's kind of tough to keep up with them every single year, but I'm the kind of guy who has to just dive into the single player and blow through that before I even touch the multiplayer. Are you similar in that way or are you straight to multiplayer?
I actually play Call of Duty games for the single player primarily.
Okay.
And it's a lot of people go, oh, it's a shitty single player. The single player in Call of Duty has been pretty good for the last few years. I've played Black Ops 2, Ghosts, and now this is my third Call of Duty game. Ghosts was easily the worst one of all. But these games do a great job of being, like, super patriotic, destroying America, and then making you be part of the military crew that has to go and take out the terrorist of the year, and basically go America oorah, blowing shit up, going in vehicles, saving the world on behalf of Red, White, and Blue. And that's the thing that just gets my testosterone going in every single Call of Duty game. It's ridiculous. It's not something you should normally take seriously. But if you have any affinity for first-person shooters and you don't care about the multiplayer, seriously rent one of these games. Because if you love America, and I do love America, these games are fucking fantastic for getting your patriotism on.
Yeah, and they're a known quantity. You know that they're going to work. They're going to play. You know, it's almost comforting to get a new one each year, as redundant as they kind of tend to be because of the annualized structure. There's still something just, I don't know, fun about it.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Exactly.
I think depending on the situation, it can be a guilty pleasure. My issue with Call of Duty as a guilty pleasure, it's more that I would describe the game as a very well-whittled product. The game, basically, they took a knife to it every single year, and they tightened it up little by little. Obviously, having multiple developers fucks with that a little bit, but they ended up making it so every year is consistently good, even if it's the same kind of good, even if sometimes it can be a little boring and samey in some places.
Yeah.
It's still a heavily polished product.
I'm curious. I haven't touched Advanced Warfare yet. I'm not sure if I will, but... Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. So you said you got your start with Black Ops 2, so you never played Modern Warfare? Like Call
Correct.
Of Duty 4?
Well, okay. I had played Modern Warfare 2 specifically because of that airport mission, Russian, which was, in all honesty, kind of an incredible mission. Just conceptually, the fact that they designed that and the way they designed it, where Alex, you know what No Russian is, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Where you were an American undercover guy. I think he was American. Either way, he was an undercover soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going with this Russian crew, I think. I think they're Russian. They're the terrorist gang.
Yep.
And they're going in to take out an airport, basically shoot it up. And it's an extremely graphic mission because you're walking through the airport and out of nowhere they pull out the guns. And you just see civilians going down left and right, them shooting them up, them taking this airport and tearing it apart in a terrifying way only post 9/11 America and Americans can understand. And the brilliant thing about this mission is that if you want, you don't have to shoot a single civilian. You don't have to do any terrorist stuff at all. You have to shoot the cops towards the end of the mission, but you can get by on that entire mission just by watching the massacre unfold. But if you want to, if you want to be that fucked up guy, you can join in and you can kill plenty of civilians. And that mission was pretty crazy. But Black Ops 2 was my first experience, and Black Ops 2 was a really good game to start out on because the campaign was extremely good, the multiplayer was extremely good, and I thought it was Treyarch at their best.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, what is your experience with Call of Duty games?
I kind of play them, I tend to do like every other year.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely do play them more for the story. Like I said, as a guilty pleasure, like I don't... To me, I describe them to my wife as being sort of like a chick flick where nobody thinks that Call of Duty is, you know, the greatest game ever, but we all sort of enjoy it, and it's just something that is just enjoyable really no matter what time it is.
It's like summer blockbuster Michael Bay sort of production.
Just big explosions, just for fun, you know, not a lot of artistic deep value.
It's a great, still fun. They're great, like, roller coaster rides.
Exactly, yeah.
That's actually the ideal way to describe it.
The, like, Modern Warfare, the first Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4, was so groundbreaking in what it did and really kind of set that bar for sort of the cinematic blockbuster first-person shooter. And so at the time, like, playing that, it was like, wow, this is something new. This is something special. And it's so funny how now when we look at that formula, because it's been used and trotted over so much now not even just because of the franchise being annualized, but because of so many other developers and publishers trying to kind of cash in on that formula. It's not as special as it once was, but that's just the way this industry works.
It's kind of amazing to just think about all of these games that we see as tired and played out and not that special, and just think about where they were originally.
Right.
Because the original Call of Duty 4, is probably one of the most important games of the 7th generation. It might even be one of the top 3 or 4 most important, hands down, just everything it did for the casual first-person shooter genre. Right. The first Assassin's Creed... Do you remember how much that was hyped up before launch, and then how they delivered on those promises in Assassin's Creed 2? I mean, we look at the stuff that's happening with AC Unity, and we're talking about how shitty Ubisoft is being, and all that stuff is well-deserved, but Assassin's Creed, even though there are 15 games in a series that's 6 years old, that series started pretty special. That series started with something magic. So every single time you see something played out, like Madden, or... every time you see something played out like Call of Duty, remember that at the bare minimum, there was something serious and important that started that.
Right, there's a reason those games are still around.
Right. There's a reason the concept of an annualized franchise even exists. Okie dokie. That brought us through that. John, what have you been playing?
All right, so I write for another small website called 8 Worlds News, and a game that I've been reviewing for that site is called The Swapper on Wii U. It is a small eShop game made by two people. It was originally released for PC and then later ported to the Sony systems, and just, I think, this past week released on Wii U. It is a science fiction puzzle game. You play as an astronaut who finds himself on a derelict space station, and all of the crew members are presumably dead or gone, and you gradually find out that the space station had been harvesting these rocks from the planet below that they had found out were actually living life forms. And so as you're moving through the environment, you're encountering these rocks and you can kind of hear their thoughts. And through that, you start to put together what happened on the station. And the main kind of key of the game is that you find this device called the Swapper device, which is essentially this gun flashlight combo thing that allows you to place up to 4 clones of yourself. So there can be 5 of your guy total on the screen. And the clones will do whatever you do, so move left, move right, jump, whatever. But then the second function of this device is to let you swap into that body of the clone. And so the entire game is built around solving these puzzles by very strategically placing clones and swapping between them to get to a final goal that only you can get to. Your clones can't use it. So you have to be in the body at the end of the puzzle. So it's a lot of stuff of putting a clone next to a switch because you know that to place your next clone, you're going to have to walk a little bit to the right so that by the time you get there, that clone will now be standing on the switch. And a lot of kind of thinking ahead of time style puzzles. And it's a very, very interesting game that I can't really think of another game that does anything even similar to it.
So you're saying that you can't think of another game that's an indie puzzle platformer with a unique art style?
Well, I can think of those, but not that use these exact mechanics.
Okay. Yeah, it does seem like, at the very least, it's not some shitty minimalistic indie thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
The game is detailed in a really special way.
I found the art style to be really bizarre, and I couldn't quite place what it was, and so I went and looked it up, and it's entirely made of clay, which I thought was really cool.
So they actually did animate it with clay. They didn't even model it. They specifically used clay to animate this entire game.
It's not necessarily like your guy. Each segment of his body is created out of clay, but then it's animated in like a flash style, like you would see like in South Park, but obviously
okay.
A lot smoother. And then the environments are made using like just a lot of parallax, so it's actually completely 2D. But it gives off this extremely three-dimensional vibe. Like, it took me a long time of looking at it to even realize that it wasn't actually 3D models.
Was this game on PlayStation Plus?
I believe so.
I'm pretty sure it was.
It's coming to PlayStation Plus, I think.
Okay.
I just looked it up now.
Yeah, I know it came Swapper. Out on all the Sony platforms a couple months ago, like just before the Wii U version.
In January, the Swapper and PS4 exclusive Infamous First Light will be added to PS4's Instant Game Collection. So if you have the PlayStation 4, or at the very least, if this is cross-buy, and I'm sure it is because it's an indie game, you'll be able to get this on Sony platforms, but it is available on Wii U, and you can get it on DDP. Would you say you would recommend the game so far?
Oh, absolutely. I actually just finished it last night, and I would absolutely... It's one of the best indie games I've played on the eShop in a long time.
How long is it?
It took me 3 nights. It was probably 12 hours long or so. I mean, it depends on how long the puzzles take you, because some of them are really hard.
Mm. Sure. Okay, and then let me see if I have this on Steam, because I think I might... It's one of those things where I've downloaded so many Humble Bundles and bought so many cheap games from Steam sales
sure.
that if there's an indie game that's more than 2 years old, I probably have it on my Steam list. And you know what? I do own a copy of The Swapper.
Yeah, it's I've heard that the Wii U version is actually the best looking version besides the PC version. Apparently, I guess I heard that maybe the PlayStation 4 version looks a lot like the PlayStation 3 version. But since it's all 2D based and not 3D, one of the things that the Wii U really has a good advantage on is when it comes to 2D games, it can do very, very high texture resolution. And since mm-hmm. that's kind of the thing that this game's graphics really rely on, the Wii U version apparently is one of the best looking versions.
Do you know how much it is on eShop?
I am not sure. I had a review copy, so
probably like $10, right?
Yeah,
maybe 15 at most.
And if it was 20, it would be worth the money.
It sounds like it. All right, flawless. Alex, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I decided to take a trip down memory lane after the announcement of Majora's Mask for 3DS, and I just played the first few hours of Majora's Mask. And oh man, do I love that game. Going back to it even, I think I might actually put it ahead of Ocarina. It might be my favorite Zelda game.
I would agree with you.
Yeah, it's such an amazing game. Alex, where do you land as far as sort of ranking the Zelda games? Are you a Majora's Mask lover?
I was never a Zelda lover when I was younger. I was almost exclusively a Pokemon guy. Then I got into Animal Crossing. I played mostly Nintendo handhelds when I was younger. It was mostly after I got to high school, which was 4 or 5 years ago. Actually, no, closer to 7 or 8, that I actually started getting into Zeldas. And I think the first one I beat and loved was like Minish Cap. And then I got into Zelda 1, and then I got into Link's Awakening when 3DS came out. I played Skyward Sword. I played Link Between Worlds. I didn't get into Link to the Past too much. It didn't float my boat, I guess. And then Ocarina of Time 3D, I played that for the first time on 3DS, and I loved the shit out of that game so much that I played it twice in a row, and I think I have like 52 hours in it right now. So if you're telling me that Majora's Mask is even better than Ocarina of Time, maybe, I cannot wait for the 3DS version. And in fact, before we continue with that, there was some stuff that came about during Famitsu where, Aonuma revealed some stuff about Majora's Mask 3D. For instance, in the original Majora's Mask, the difficulty bounds assumed that players had experienced Ocarina of Time before, but for the remake, new players were also being considered. Aonuma explained to Famitsu, specifically speaking, parts that were conventions and weren't explained at all are changed, and challenges which you realize by repeating many times are made easier to understand. Rather than making the experience simpler, the changes in Majora's Mask 3D are intended to help stumped players with hints. The 3-day cycle remains the same, and the system for following other people's actions aren't changed. There is, however, a boss battle that has seen changes. As a new element, players will be able to fish at two places. And then the other thing that he announced was that playing on the new 3DS is going to differ to some extent. Do any of these things excite you two?
Absolutely, because I'm betting I know exactly which boss battle they are. I'm going to use the word fixing.
Okay.
There's a boss called Georg, who is an underwater boss, and he is the glitchiest, worst-designed boss in any Zelda game ever, and is the cause of great frustrations throughout my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it seems like what they're doing is they're basically unlost leveling it, where they're basically going to assume that you have not played Ocarina of Time before, which they should do, but it sounds like they might casualize it a little bit in the process. Are you worried about this, Alex? Who's playing the game now?
I'm not at all, actually. Just because, like, my experience, especially Majora's Mask, but also Ocarina of Time, back in the day, I sat down with one of those, like, Brady Games guides in order to fully understand exactly, like, even what I was getting into. Because there's a lot of hidden complexity and sort of just, there's this level of, like, obtuseness to Majora's Mask, and I think it's got a bit of roughness around the edges where I feel like that Nintendo extra kind of coat of paint, bit of polish, smoothing that they do with like everything. Because basically it was like Ocarina of Time, you know, sold boatloads for them, and they have this engine, and they gave, you know, Aonuma an opportunity to kind of step up to the Zelda plate and take a swing and make something with this engine that was creative and different for, you know, N64 before GameCube rolled out. And it almost feels like an experiment that went totally, totally right, but is a little bit, you know, it's got its quirks, and for that I love it. But I definitely think that, you know, maybe taking newcomers into account or just making it a bit more accessible can only be a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they only had a year to make this game, so it definitely doesn't have the level of polish that most other Zelda games have.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and then, so I guess I should ask, Alex, are you seeing any big problems with this game as you're going back to it? I know you're saying you love the shit out of it, and it sounds like you do, but are you seeing any of this glitchy stuff? Are you seeing any of the bad business?
You know, I haven't run into anything yet, but and I think maybe, too, it's because it's sort of like putting on an old shoe, or like, you know, it's like riding a bike. Like, you haven't, you know, it's like, even though I haven't visited in a while, I just kind of like fall back into some muscle memory. So I'm just kind of going through the motions, where I feel like if I was to hop in fresh, I might have felt a bit more lost without direction. But I don't know. I think people are going to love this game. I'm really excited for everyone that missed out on it the first time. And I'm curious. So, you said, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's going to take advantage of the hardware revision, the new 3DS?
It didn't say how, but it made it sound like there's going to be ways in which the new 3DS version differs. And I hope that means that the game looks better.
Me too.
What were you going to add, Alex?
Oh, no, that was just it. So I was just curious. Like, you know, I'm wondering if we're going to be seeing more games like this where it's like better on new 3DS, you know, I'm like, as far as moving forward, or things that are exclusive, it interests me, because I remember when Majora's Mask first came out, it was like, you got to make sure you have that expansion pack, because it's doing crazy things that Ocarina couldn't do. So, you know, I'm just really excited, and I can't wait.
It's going to do some interesting things to the Zelda conversation, because when Ocarina of Time 3D came out, sure, it got talked about for a while, especially because it was the first big 3DS game that it came out on the system pretty much at all, but Ocarina of Time is already so much in the DNA of the gaming industry and so much eternally part of the conversation that it didn't really change too much. But Majora's Mask, even though it's a Zelda game, is probably one of the dark horses of the series, not even in quality, just in the fact that even though it gets talked about way less than most of the other Zelda games, and it, by a lot of people, isn't seen as the best Zelda game.
It's polarizing. It's a polarizing game, for sure. I mean, you rarely find someone who doesn't have, like, who's actually played it, that doesn't have some sort of strong opinion about it. It has its fans, and it really has its haters. And I can actually understand both sentiments toward that, just because it is so different, and it's hardly, you know, a traditional Zelda experience, because, I mean, Zelda is not even in this game, really. So
it's about Link and his adventure more, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
So I'm wondering then if this whole thing is going to change the conversation, if they're going to make it easier for new players to get in. The hope is, since this is a remake, that they're going to give people at least a reason to see this game in the same way a lot of people like you do, as one of the best games ever. And that's what it seems like Nintendo is doing with a lot of these remakes. Or, not necessarily remakes in all cases. A Link Between Worlds felt like, to me, as someone who has now played both games, a version of Link to the Past that works a lot faster and is a lot easier to get into, specifically because it is a lot easier. This game is going to be adding in new stuff to help new players. Ocarina of Time 3D added in a lot of stuff to help new players. The same thing with even the Pokemon game that's coming out, yeah. Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire.
I feel like the changes that are being made to Majora's Mask for this 3DS version are going to be a bit more along the lines of something like what we saw with Wind Waker HD, with like the Swift Sail and stuff like that, where it's not like we're not going to be getting like an entirely new game, but we're going to be getting these little tweaks and additions that just make it smoother.
We're getting an important 10% more.
Refined is perfect. Right. Yeah. Which I love. Like, that's just like why I want to see more of these HD, or whatever you want to call them, remakes, re-releases from Nintendo, because you're actually getting a product that's being redone. You're not getting like, you know, like the God of War HD collection, where it's like, let's just bump up the resolution, you know?
Right, those are ports.
Right, they're essentially just, yeah, ports that run in 720p or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I would love to see Metroid Prime, you know, for Wii U. Like just like, you know, some of these games where they just they go back and they, I don't know, I just I so bad want some of these older experiences in with prettier visuals.
Anything to add before we close this out, John?
No.
All righty. So that'll be our segment for this week. Thank you for joining me, Alex. Your experience is clear.
Well, thank you for having me.
The ability to keep up. I'm trying to compliment you here. I'm doing the best I can, but you did a great job.
Thank you, sir.
And John, for someone who is doing his first podcast for the first time, you did a tremendous job too. You are pretty much a natural.
Well, thank you very much.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at C-U-L-A-F-I-A, that is Kulafi A. You can find Alex Osborne at A-L-E-X-C-O-S-B-O-R-N, Alex C. Osborne. And John, if you want to follow him on Twitter, you can find him at J-T-S-K-N-I-G-H-T-92, J-T-S-Knight-92. That'll be all, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Neil Ronahan here, director, NintendoWorldReport.com, and with me is my lovely associate editor, Zachary Miller.
Aw, gee.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about a couple games. This is pretty much like a, just a crazy-ass what-you've-been-playing episode. I don't know what order you'll be hearing this in, but regardless or not, I've been playing Super Smash Bros. On Wii U for almost a week at this point.
Yeah, you have.
We got the review copy in. I have a buttload of videos that are up on Nintendo World Report's YouTube channel, yep. NWR TV.
I am saving myself for the game. I haven't watched any of them.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff focusing on music, because that's what people seem to dig, except for a lot of people yelled at me, because when I was doing, like, I just did a lot of kind of themed battles where it would be like, oh, here's like 8 Mario characters playing on the Super Mario Galaxy stage.
Mm.
And I turned down like the sound effects and stuff, so you could just hear the music, which is, you know, some of its very lovely remixes. But I didn't have the hammer or the final smashes turned off. So there's a couple times where people get hammers, and I got rightfully called out for that, but I kind of find it funny that I think one of them is just like, the YouTube comments are just a bunch of people being like, hey, what, fuck you. Like, I was jamming out to the song, and then the stupid hammer ruined it. So I'll probably turn those off when I record more.
Good music in that series, I say.
But yeah, so talking about Super Smash Bros. On Wii U, it's a very, very good game.
Is it the 3DS game, but better, or the same, but more content, or what do you mean?
It's like, it's such a weird thing, because, like, if this game came out first, I think my mind would be blown.
Yeah.
Like, my brains would be all over the floor, and I would be head over heels in love with this game. But I think because the 3DS version came out and kind of, you know, you got to mess around with the characters, you got to see some of the modes in the game, some of the new wrinkles, that it's a little less exciting. That doesn't make it any less of a good game. And I think if you were to compare the 3DS and the Wii U versions, I think the Wii U version is pound for pound better.
Oh, sure.
I think it has more stuff. I think it has more content. I think it's a more compelling package.
Looks better.
Yeah, it looks absolutely gorgeous. I think the stages, there might be like a few more in the Wii U version, but then you can also create stages.
That's nice.
And that's pretty cool. You have a lot more kind of room to move around than you did in Brawl's created stage mode.
Which I never used ever.
The A player stuff is so chaotic and so delightful.
Is it like chaotic in an enjoyable way, or is it like, I don't know what the fuck's happening right now?
It's kind of a little bit the latter. I will be testing that to its full limits this weekend.
Nice.
I think right now the count is about 8 or 9 people over.
Oh, damn.
So we will be playing some A-player Smash, I'll have you know.
With GameCube controllers?
Yeah, I have one GameCube controller adapter.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be using some combination of like Wii remotes and Pro controllers and GameCube controllers.
Sweet.
I'm sure some people will complain, being like, hey man, you beat me because I wasn't using a GameCube controller. So I have a feeling like I'll be using a Pro controller.
Get good, people.
Yep, that's the way I look at it.
But,
I mean, playing with a GameCube controller is great.
Yeah.
Like, it's the way the game's meant to be played in a way. As much as some people are kind of annoyed that it's like the GameCube controller won't die, like, it's just so natural to play Smash with that.
I agree. I thought it was, I liked playing Melee at PAX East. A lot better than Brawl, because, you know, Brawl has the classic controller, which is great, but it's not the same.
Yeah. You could use GameCube controllers.
That's true,
Brawl,
you could. So tell me about the Amiibos. Are you having any interest, fun with those at all, or are they just kind of sitting there?
Well, so far I haven't gotten super deep with it. I guess a little inside baseball. There was a Wii U system update this week that I think people might...
Oh, I should get that. Like,
yeah, I mean, people that pay attention to this, you probably heard that there was a Wii U system update. And in the patch notes, it said that it, like, added an interface on the system, so that you can kind of, like, look at Amiibos on a system level.
Ah!
So, when I first got the game, I suddenly put the Amiibo on, and then I wondered when I stopped playing the game why it froze.
Oh!
And then I realized, by kind of some troubleshooting, that whenever I used an Amiibo in the game, like, the Amiibo seemed to work fine, you know, my Link Amiibo's up to, like, level 30 now, and I've been having a lot of fun with him. His name's Linkles. it is kind of fun to, like, then you feed them stuff and make them better. It is kind of, like, a little bit of, like, that character customization, but, like, giving it a little more of a personality. Because you get to kind of interact with it. And I actually have done a couple matches where it's me and my Link Amiibo teaming up to fight some fools. And I think there's a lot of potential to be had, like, people that are fortunate enough to have friends nearby that all have the game. You know, if people have Amiibos, then you can have some pretty fun, like, multiplayer battles there, especially because you can do, you know, 4 teams of 2 fighting each other at once.
Yeah.
But because of that, I haven't really had a lot of time to dive into the Amiibo stuff since that update went live, because I kind of just stopped messing around with them once I realized that the game just froze.
Right.
Whenever I played it. But I haven't messed around with it too much since. But I have a Mario and a Kirby and a Link Amiibo that I will be messing with a lot over the next couple days. But whether it's a little bit the collector in me, but after seeing them in game, like, it's enough of a hook for me that I'll be buying a bunch of them.
Oh, wow. All right.
Probably only characters that I like.
Well, yeah.
So, like, I probably won't get, what, Diddy Kong or something. I'm not going to get Diddy Kong, but, like, I'm going to get Marth. I'm going to get Little Mac.
Yeah.
Like, those are things that are going to happen.
Villager.
Yeah, I'll get Villager. I might get Wii Fit Trainer just for the lols.
Huh.
And then when, you know, I'll get Shulk, I'll get Samus, I'll get Fox. Like, I'm going to get a bunch of them, but...
I'm waiting for Zero Suit Samus, which has not been announced.
I think every figure is going to happen.
It better happen.
Or every character in the game is going to get a figure. I think it's just a matter of time. As long as Smash Brothers does not completely crash and burn, which doesn't seem likely, I imagine by this time next year, you will have your pick of every single figure, if not sooner than that.
I think I read...
right now I think they have more than half the roster is going to have figures by February.
I read somewhere today that the Smash Bros. Pre-orders have eclipsed Mario Kart 8 by now.
Yeah, and which apparently is cool. Like the people have been saying that it's like double what Mario Kart 8
oh,
is,
which God.
Is absurd.
Wow.
But also, I mean, maybe Mario Kart 8, that there wasn't as much of a drive for pre-orders. I don't really know how to track all of that.
And you can preload Smash Brothers on your Wii U if you have the hard drive space, which
I believe
I don't.
It's about 16.5 gigs.
Yeah, I don't have that space.
That's
half the good hard drive.
That's more than that, actually, because you don't have...
Yeah, you don't have the full 32.
Yeah, I think it's only like 23 or something available to you. But yeah, I mean, I like amiibos. It's still... There is kind of a limit to what you can do with them, and it very much is kind of a superfluous thing. But it's... I mean... I've been having fun with it, and that's kind of like, that's a success to me.
So the other thing I want to ask about is whatever, the board game mode. What is that?
Smash Tour?
What is that? Is it Mario Party?
I think if I were to compare Smash Run to Smash Tour, I think that Smash Run is better, which is kind of funny because I think we were on the show like a month ago.
And you didn't like it.
Me being like, man, whatever they have at Wii U has got to be better than Smash Run. But like Smash Run kind of grew on me more after that.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
At least let's put it this way. I've so far, and I'll be playing a lot more because like I said, I'm going to have a bunch of people over this weekend.
Yeah.
But I did, I played Smash Tour. You have to do it with four people, whether or not you have computer players or not. So it's not like four human people. Like I've played it a couple times where it's just me and the computers.
Yeah.
But it is this kind of like this fast-paced Mario Party game where each person picks a Mii and then you move around a board, but like everybody moves at the same time.
Hmm.
And I mean, we have video up on the YouTube channel that I think puts this into words better, pictures. Better. But basically everyone, you know, they have a spinner and then they can move from 1 to 6 and then they move on the board and they're trying to collect powers, like the ability power-ups and other fighters, kind of like Smash Bros. In that regard, except for in this one, you have your Mii character, and you were collecting other fighters that then you can use, so they're almost like lives.
I see.
And you can do it, I think, anywhere from 15 to 25 turns. There's three different sized boards. There's a small, medium, and large. And you're moving around, and you're collecting these different items. You get trophies that you can use as like kind of like a boosters. And buffs for the fights that you occasionally have or when you're on the board.
Okay.
Like one of them's like it's an Excite Bike guy and it'll give you double your roll.
Like stickers. And there's other ones, stickers in Brawl.
Yes. And there's other ones where it's like, oh, you'll start with a super scope on this battle.
Okay.
And how you do the battles is that when two characters run into each other on the map, then everybody fights.
I see.
And yeah, your goal is to just, you know, power up your character and collect as many fighters as possible. And then you have a final match where basically it's everybody's, like, I think I had a match where I was playing the computer where it was like, I had like 8 fighters and the other ones had like 2.
Oh, okay.
So very clearly was going to win. But I think it's also like, I think the way it gets scored is something like, okay, I have those 8 fighters, but if someone were to just, like, take me to task with all of them, then they would probably win, because I think they get a point for every kill they get against me.
Gotcha.
And I would get a point for every, like, kill I get and every fighter that I have that survives.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a neat little mode, but when I played it with humans, we were kind of bored halfway through.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is that you could go several turns without anybody running into each other.
Oh.
So you're just kind of playing this board game simultaneously where you're not really interacting.
Yeah, that's not great.
And in all honesty, like, not to quite the extent of how bad Mario Kart 8 battle mode is, but it kind of reminded me of that, and that it's like, when it works, it's really fun.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work every time.
Yeah. I do wonder why they didn't... I mean, Smash Run on Wii U sounds really great.
Yeah.
Like a bigger map, looks better, you can see things more, you know. I wonder why they didn't put that in.
I don't know.
And honestly, you'd probably have 4 human players around more often with Wii U.
Yep.
Whatever.
And then the couple other modes, like event mode is in there. And I like what they did with event mode. It's not just a linear list. Like, I mean, they showed it in videos, but it's basically like you start off with one event. You beat that event, then like other paths open up.
Oh, okay.
And then like, you know, depending on how you beat, when you beat events or when you unlock different characters, then different paths open up.
And these are like challenges, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. They're like the event modes that were in Brawl and Melee.
Oh, was that in Melee? I don't remember that at all.
And it was in Brawl, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the stuff where it's like, oh, you're Mario, beat Bowser and Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I remember that. Or, okay, yeah.
Or like they have one that's, I think, one of my personal favorites so far, which is it's a kind of a play at Four Swords, where it's four Toon Links fighting each other. And like the flavor text going into the event is just like, oh, they're here to save the day, dot, dot, dot. Oh, they're fighting again. And then you have to play as a Toon Link and beat the other Toon Links.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, that's really fun. The classic mode, which, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a way to do classic mode a little better. Because it is very, very similar to how they have it set up on the 3DS version, except for instead of having, like, that map that you're walking on, there's, like, this tabletop grid where there's, like, different groups of enemies. And you move your like trophy character that you are to these different groups, and then you'll go into different battles. And like if you let some enemies sit there for a while, then they'll get stronger. And like it's a neat idea, but I don't know. It's fun, and it's once again it's kind of like going through classic mode. You can kind of do it pretty quickly, but it's just something that I wasn't as crazy into.
I recently beat classic with all the characters. I never want to touch that mode again.
Yeah. But you might have to if you want to unlock everything in Wii U.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on 3DS, I'll never touch it on 3DS. But I'm going through All-Star, and I really hate All-Star mode.
Yeah.
It takes so fucking long.
All-Star mode, and All-Star mode, the worst is when, like, you get to the end and you're like, ah, crap.
Yeah.
I think the only difference is that, like, the recover area is prettier on the Wii U version. And it goes, instead of going from oldest to newest, it goes newest to oldest.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
All-Star mode's basically the same.
Yeah.
One of the other new modes is Master Orders and Crazy Orders, which are basically just these kind of like challenge things. If you do Master Orders, it's kind of like pick a character, you know, play a challenge, and like maybe you'll get a reward or something.
Oh.
With Crazy Orders, it's like you need to spend gold or get crazy passes or something. And then you basically play as many challenges as you can and then kind of cash out and then fight Crazy Hand.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like you're building up. And I think it's like, you know, the longer you go, the more rewards you'll get.
Right.
But if you lose, then you lose everything.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's like all these kind of like, it's like the 3DS version in the way that you have all these different things that like, oh, okay, I got bored with classic mode. Okay, I'm going to try Master Orders.
Yeah.
Like there's just all these things that you can bounce around between. And that's, I'm playing it in a very similar way to how I played the 3DS version where like, you know, I'm going to look at the challenge board and being like, all right, so if I use Charizard in Home Run Contest, then I'll get the challenge square. Okay, that's leading me. Okay, if I beat classic mode at above 5 intensity with this character, then I'll unlock something else.
Mm.
And I'm kind of just bouncing around like that,
that
way. And I like event mode a lot. I think event mode so far is my favorite part of the game.
Okay.
At least the single player component. I mean, of course, at the end of the day, Smash and 8-player Smash is going to be the bread and butter.
Sure.
One thing to note, I don't think online is going to be ready by the review embargo.
Really?
So, I think there's a chance that it could be up before then. The review embargo, for people who are wondering, is Wednesday, November 19th. And I think it's 9 a.m. Pacific time, or it's 9 a.m. Eastern. I forget. You will see something from us on that day. It just might not have a score at the end of it.
Yeah.
Because if online isn't up and I don't get to test online, then I ain't putting a score in that game. We did a similar thing for Mario Golf World Tour.
I remember
where
that,
I basically put up a review and didn't give it a score. And then when I could test the online, then it was essentially that review with a few things tweaked about it.
You did what Polygon should do.
Yeah. But I kind of mentioned that because with all this stuff with like the review embargoes with Assassin's Creed Unity and stuff, that, I mean, I guess people that are listening to this might not even follow as closely. Long story short, the new Assassin's Creed game had an embargo after the game was actually out in stores.
Right.
And the game wasn't that good. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something that bugs me that, like, when online's such a major component of a game, and this is the same thing with Mario Golf, you saw a lot of people just throw up reviews with the score without ever playing the online.
True.
And I got a big problem with that. And this is as someone who, to be completely honest, I'm going to play the online for the review and probably never play it again.
Yeah.
Whether the online's great or awesome, I just don't really play games online that
much. Me neither.
But it's a very integral part of that review, because I know that there are people that probably won't buy the Wii U version if the online's not good.
Right.
And that I can't answer that for you yet, but I will. And I'm pretty hopeful. I think the 3DS version runs smooth enough.
Like, yeah.
There's definitely some hiccups, but I think if you know, the Wii U is a better online system.
We hope.
Yeah.
I'm pretty hopeful. If it runs well, I can see us doing like even a Smash Night, NWR Smash Night for a while.
Dude, if we could do tournaments.
Like we did with Mario Kart for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mario Golf.
And Mario Golf.
That's kind of that's the one big unknown so far.
Actually, by the time you hear this, the Mario Kart DLC will be out, and you can buy it and play it, which I will be doing.
I will probably play it for about an hour and a half, and then
never touch it again.
I can't help but be a troll about it, because I know that that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I probably will too.
I'll probably, because I can record some video, because I have amiibos, so I can do the amiibo thing with that. And we're restricted in how much we can record. But I'll be pushing that to the limit. I'll have fun with that, and I'll play the new tracks. I'm really excited for them, but, like, I don't know, it'll be like how I played Mario Kart 8, where, like, I played it, enjoyed it, wrote a review that everyone hated me for, and then stopped playing it.
Kind of was done with it,
kind of going back to that, like, that was my worry with Mario Kart. That's kind of the reason why I was a little negative on it.
Yeah.
Was that I played it, and I realized that, like, I'm probably never going to play this.
I mean, I haven't touched it since the Mercedes-Benz DLC came out, honestly.
Yeah, I think we saw like the Excite Bike track or something, and it got me to turn it on and actually buy the DLC. And I downloaded the update that got the Mercedes-Benz track, and I went and played a Grand Prix, rocked one of the Mercedes-Benz things, played as a colored Yoshi, and then turned it off halfway through because I'm just like, yeah, okay, that was cool.
Yeah,
I'll play the new tracks when they come out. But
yeah,
it just, I mean, I hear people that are still playing Mario Kart 8 pretty regularly, and that's awesome. I'm not
that guy.
Yeah. Before turning it on for the update, I hadn't played it since June. And that might have been the time where I was playing it online with people, and because I couldn't talk to people during the race, I fucking fell asleep.
Oh my gosh, right?
In the middle of a race.
Wow.
Scott's not going to edit this episode, but I'm going to crap on him a little bit, because he would always be hosting online matches, and there would be like four people in the race, and he wouldn't add computers.
Oh.
So you just have this empty match. So it'd be like you kind of like each person would slot in, and those tracks are designed for 12 people.
Yeah.
So I would just like be like, there's no one near me. I'm just basically going on a track and turning every now and then.
Yeah.
And there was one time where I fell asleep. It wasn't that long, but I notably dozed off, and my car drove off a cliff. I woke up, I was like, all right, I got to go to bed after this.
Well, let's switch gears to to
Demon's Crest.
Game.
You've been playing Demon's Crest, and it seems like, unlike the rest of the world, you're not as high on it. And that worries me, as someone who bought Demon's Crest about a day before he got Smash Brothers in the mail for review, and then hasn't touched Demon's Crest.
It's really hard to get into. Nothing is explained. Let me first say, it's a really gorgeous game. It's maybe one of the best-looking Super Nintendo games. I'm not really high on the soundtrack. It's very slow and gothic, which is appropriate, but
yeah, I thought the music was nice. It was on the spoiler. It was on the radio trivia segment of the telethon that I was on, and that music seemed really cool, and it kind of made me hype to play the game.
Yeah, but you know, it's not directed in the way that a game like Mega Man X is, or even the Gargoyles Quest games. You're constantly going back to levels like, what the heck did I just miss? There are four levels in the game when you open it up. The first level, you never have to revisit. Like, it's just the intro stage. I don't even know why they let you revisit it. But the other three, you have to explore the hell out of to find items, which is cool in a sense, but you also have to find the other levels. Like, other levels will open up as you complete these first three levels, which is, again, awesome, but also you have no idea that's happening.
Yeah.
So the game is just not directed at all, and the items are not particularly useful. Like, you get an item, a tornado, that says lets you climb higher or climb walls or something. I thought, well, that's cool. But I tried to climb a wall after I stuck to it, and nothing happened. I thought, what am I doing wrong? And then I noticed he's actually spitting out little tornadoes. I thought, well, maybe you have to jump into the tornado that he spits out, and they act like a platform.
Okay.
So that's not explained. But after you get the Falcon Gargoyle transformation, you never have to use the tornado power again.
So you kind of, it's like a, I mean, I know it's a little bit Metroid-styled, but it's Metroid-styled in a way that, like, the items kind of stack and replace each other as opposed to building this wild array of weapons.
Yes. Like, once you get
the isn't terrible.
No, it's not terrible, but it just kind of renders all the work you did to get the tornado power moot, yeah. You know?
Like, that was the one thing that, I mean, just kind of comparing it to a game that we actually, we talked about on the show a couple months ago, Euphoria.
Yeah.
That was one thing that kind of made me really happy about that game, is it seemed like every power-up that you got was very meaningful.
Yes.
And that was kind of a short romp.
It stayed meaningful.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you got this ability, you have to use this in this one spot. Like, no, it opened up the entire game.
Right.
And it seems like in Demon's Crest, maybe a little bit, it's like, you know, okay, you use this in this specific area, and then you move on.
Right. And if Demon's Crest had more of a Super Metroid map, I think it would be more forgivable.
Yeah.
But as it is, they're very distinct levels. Each level has a boss and an optional boss. And and the most useful things you find are empty bottles, which you use to fill with potions at a shop.
Cool.
And spell scrolls, which you buy from, you know, you buy the spell once you found the spell scroll from a shop. And the potions refill your hearts, and the spell scrolls generally do damage to enemies. You know, the aside from the fact that it's very obtuse, I don't like how slowly it moves.
I mean, that was kind of a problem with Gargoyle's Quest.
Yeah, and I was hoping they'd make it a little faster paced here, but not only does he move slowly, he spits fireballs slowly, and he flies slowly, and I don't know, it's a very slow-moving game.
Yeah. Which isn't bad. I mean, I kind of like that contemplative platformer. I mean, I'm also a person who loves Mutant Muds. Which,
yeah, but it's not that kind of thing.
That Demon's Crest inspired him a little bit, or maybe that was for Treasure Knots. I don't know. I could be making stuff up.
But it's not. You don't have to be super careful if you found a lot of hearts.
Yeah.
You know, it's not contemplative or contemplative. Sorry, so much as slow.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I'm spoiled by fast games like Super Metroid and Mega Man X, but it's hard. I found this.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like I thought you were going to kind of rattle off modern games, but Super Metroid and Mega Man X were contemporaries.
They came out the same year.
Yeah, I think Demon's Crest all in North America. They were all in 94, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Mega Man X team was not talking to the Demon's Crest team, and vice versa. But it does have a Mega Man X kind of boss progression where each boss falls to a specific weapon or form much easier than other weapons.
Cool.
It is cool.
I mean, I'm still really anxious to play this game. And
I mean, it's good. I don't want to say it's a bad game. It's a good game. It's just maybe not.
It's a little obtuse. It might be the kind of game that you bust open and walk through if you get stuck.
Yes. Because, you must do that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the kind of thing that, like, yeah, you know, back in 94, maybe beating your head against a wall was a little more favorable.
I'm 32 years old. I have other things to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I know someone's going to get mad when I said spoiled old men and I'm the baby. But I think,
I mean, the game is
my
good.
Gameplay style at this point is of an old man who doesn't have a lot of time because I'm a man who doesn't have a lot of time, whether I'm young or old.
It's like the game is great, but it's not like as legendary as I went in. thinking it was.
A lot of that kind of, like, that feeling kind of makes me think of how I felt when I finally played DuckTales.
Really?
Because I didn't play, like, I played a lot of other Disney games. Like, Quackshot was my token Quack Disney shot. Game from the early 90s that I was like, you haven't played Quackshot? You're crazy. It's the best. The music's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's, when I heard people talk about DuckTales, I'm like, is it as good as Quackshot? And in my opinion,
they're like, what the hell is Quackshot?
After playing the original DuckTales on NES, I don't think DuckTales is as good as Quackshot.
Wow.
I think that, I mean, Quackshot is oddly enough a very similar game. It has a very similar design to DuckTales. I just like Quackshot more. That's not to say, I think DuckTales' soundtrack is actually better than Quackshot's. Because, yeah. I mean, The Moon is one of the best songs in a video game ever.
Yes.
But I think it was kind of the same sort of thing as, you know, I was someone who didn't play it back when it came out in, like, 1990 or 91 or whatever.
Yeah.
So when I finally played it, and, like, I think I got it in, like, 2008 or something. And I finally played it. I'm like, well, that was cool. But, like, that's what everyone's been talking about for 15 years?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do that might be the same thing that you're running into with Demon's Crest. Because for me, whenever I heard about Demon's Crest, it would be, like, in hushed voices. I'd be like, oh, my God, it's so good. It's never going to come out on Virtual Console, though.
Yeah.
And now it's finally out. And it's probably, I mean, there's a lot of games that have come out that were re-released that, like, I think Knights is one of them. You know, maybe even Earthbound to an extent. Although I think Earthbound is actually way better. It holds up way, way better than a lot of these other games.
So many problems with that damn game.
I mean, like, and like, it is hard to go back and play Earthbound, but I think the writing in Earthbound makes it stand out.
That's true. It is a very charming game.
Yeah. Like, the combat's not that great. It's interesting, and it works in that world, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm actually more excited to go back to Gargoyles 2 now, because I'm going to play that through.
Cool.
Because I actually...
I got that too. I haven't.
This is going to sound terrible, but I like Gargoyle's Quest more than Demon's Crest.
I really, really like Gargoyle's Quest on
it's
Game Boy.
It's so
like,
cute
it
easy to get
me
into.
Away. Like that fucking game blew me away. I did not expect it to be that good.
No,
and that was one of the ones that I heard in hushed tones. Like, oh, you've never played Gargoyle's Quest. You should play Gargoyle's Quest. And I played Gargoyle's Quest, and I started talking about it in hushed tones.
Yeah,
telling other people like, oh, you haven't played it. You should play it. It's on your 3DS. Go get it.
Yeah, and I didn't even know there was a sequel until they announced it.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that there was a sequel, but I was like, it's never going to come out of Virtual Console.
Yeah.
But it is, and it's there.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody should play Demon's Crest because it's gorgeous. It's so good looking. And... you know, if you have a hard time getting into it like I did, read a FAQ. It's not sacrilege. Yeah. That's what I should have done. I actually restarted the game 3 times because I kept thinking, I must be doing something wrong. I hate this game. Like, what's wrong with me?
I have a little bit of an apprehension about playing it because that's what I keep on hearing. Is that like, it's like once everyone was kind of like, oh my God, it's out. Then like the next week I started seeing people on Twitter be like, hey, if you're having trouble, like here's a hint.
Right.
I'm like, oh, it's one of those games.
Yeah.
So I guess let's close this out.
All right.
I'm going to talk a little bit about a game called Whoa Dave.
Whoa!
Whoa Dave.
I've heard of this.
It's by Choice Provisions, the gang formerly known as Gaijin Games.
Oh!
Although I think Gaijin Games is still a thing. It's just a part of them. Like, they're still putting out Bitrip. I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah.
But it's by Jason Cirillo. Primarily, RoboTube is what he used to go by.
Mm.
So it's not necessarily like these same dudes who made Runner 2, although it is that same company.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying Whoa Dave. It's kind of a goofy arcade game that might be at $5 if you're not into an arcade game that seems steep. Because it's just a high score game. There is one mode, that is it.
It's a brawler, right?
It kind of is. It's like you play this guy who can jump around and pick up items, and then, like, there's aliens or something, and they hatch from eggs, and if you, like, kind of let the aliens go to the bottom of the stage, and then they, like, evolve.
Oh.
But then you get more money when you kill them, and the way that you kill them is by throwing bombs or eggs into them.
So risk-reward.
Yeah. And then you want to get the most money you can possible.
Oh.
That's kind of fun. I figured I'd mention that. That's, like, a game that I've been playing.
Yeah.
But to finish up, let's talk about the real hotness, which is Fantasy Life.
Oh my gosh.
I think when last you heard me and Zach on a podcast, like Connectivity, we were talking about Fantasy Life, but Zach hadn't played it yet.
I got it at the Target sale.
So
I got Bayonetta. I got Bayonetta and Kirby, which I beat. Kirby is super charming, by the way. And
Triple Deluxe, if you have not played that, I think that is one of my favorite Kirby games.
Might be the best Kirby game after Adventure for me.
And I mean, I'm the buffoon who gave Kirby's Epic Yarn a 10 out of 10, and I stand by that 10 out of 10. And it's almost a good thing I didn't have to review Triple Deluxe, because that would have been a serious question. I was blown away by Triple Deluxe. Like, I kind of got it just because I was like, oh, it's a Kirby game, I'll have fun with it. I didn't like Return to Dreamland as much. Mass Attack was cute. But I hadn't really gotten deep into like a real, quote unquote, real Kirby game in a long time. If you don't count Epic Yarn as a real Kirby game, which I could hear an argument for. But Triple Deluxe is just like, it's basically like the Fire Emblem Awakening of Kirby games. Where it's like this game that's like, it's not technically like an anniversary game, but it's kind of an anniversary game.
Yeah.
Because it just reflects on the series as a whole. Like, you have the keychains that you get that are all these awesome throwbacks to old levels.
Those are so cute.
And old games. And then it just kind of, like, even, I love the level where, like, you basically, like, pull off the background and then it just shows
an
old Game Boy stage. And there's a lot of stuff like that that just really made me smile. And all the new power-ups are great. I love the ninja one, or the archer. The archer is the really cool one. And it's so much fun, and they use 3D in awesome ways.
Yeah, they really do. Maybe the best usage.
Yeah,
I mean, like, in a first party game.
When people
3D land.
Yeah, when people are like, "Oh man, why do they have all these 2D platformers out on 3DS?" If people complain about that, I'm like, because all the 2D platformers should be like Kirby.
Yeah,
because it just uses such a good depth of field, and that's the thing that I thought Mutant Muds did very well as well.
True. It's a similar kind of thing. You're going back and forth between planes of the stage. Yeah. Okay, so Kirby's great. You should play it. But Fantasy Life, I'm only two and a half hours in, but oh my gosh. I'm going to play this for the rest of the year. November. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not that long. It's not that bold of a statement.
Right.
I mean, I might be still playing it for the rest of the year, and I'm 55
hours
in.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's a bit of a bold statement.
Yeah.
I am completely head over heels in love with Fantasy Life, and I was already pretty in love with it when I wrote the review, and I just kept on playing more of it.
The writing is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's gotten to the point with the writing that, like, I hunted down the people at the treehouse. Well, no, you don't have to hunt them down. You say something positive about Fantasy Life on Twitter, and then those dudes will favorite it.
Nice.
And you're like, okay, those are the guys who wrote... translated Fantasy Life.
Yeah.
And then I started following them, and they just retweet people saying good things about Fantasy Life. and like cute screenshots of it and stuff. Like, it's pretty great. It's like my own little Fantasy Life feed.
Yeah.
The writing's like hysterical. In a way that, and like, this is a game with so much text that it's almost dumb.
Yeah,
especially
it is.
When you're playing through that main story.
It's more than most RPGs.
What I love about the main story is that, yes, there is a part of it where, like, the main story is super slow and plotting. The writing's really, really funny, though.
Yeah.
But, like, it keeps on setting you up where it's like, you're going to have to fight this dragon. You're going to have to fight the... Oh, no. Like, just, like, go beat up that stone. You're not going to... I mean, you'll kill the dragon later because you got to get master class in being a mercenary or whatever, or a paladin. But you don't need to actually fight this dragon. And it's like, you go to all these different areas, and it's like, they're building up to these huge boss fights. And they're just like, nah, man, we just had a prank war.
The thing that tickles me is that I started out as a lumberjack or a woodcutter.
I started off as a tailor, and that was a dumb idea.
Oh, really?
Because I was like, oh, I'll do one of the weird ones. And then I wound up reading later that, like, the tailor is one of the hardest ones to start off as.
Jeez. Well, I just love that, like, You get experience from chopping down trees.
You get experience doing everything. It's awesome.
I know you do. You get experience by running.
Yeah.
And like, you chop down trees and you sell the trees, and then every once in a while you come across an elder tree.
Yep.
And you chop that down, get a whole bunch of wood. And
you get a bounty.
Ton
and you
of take experience. It back to the and bounty a bounty. Player. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's just so funny. And then, like, you know, I was avoiding monsters for a while, but then I remembered I have a knife and I can kind of defend myself. So yeah. I've been doing that and getting experience. It's just so, you know, and now I'm at a point where somebody said, well, you have to try another job to open up this area of the map. I'm like, all right. Yep. So I'm going to go do that. But it's just like the whole town, the whole castle town is like, there's so much to do.
Yeah.
Once you have jobs, I can just tell there's an infinite amount of content.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like I said, I'm 55 hours into the game and I see no end in sight.
Yeah.
Like I have a lot of, like, I guess I think they go up to like God class or something, but I think you might only be able to get that if you buy the DLC.
Oh,
but
okay.
Like I'm at master in a lot of them. I haven't gotten anything past master yet. But I intend to. I've just been kind of utilitarian. And yeah. That, like, I'll get one to master and then switch over to another one. And I think I have everything. Everything is either master or the step below master.
This is going to be Dragon Quest IX for me. Because you could switch jobs in that game, too. And I did all the time.
Well, I'm sure you know that this, I mean, this is made by...
Yeah, it's level 5, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same people. And actually, this is... Fantasy Life is kind
it
of what
looks
they wanted
like Dragon Quest IX.
This is supposedly what they originally pitched to Square for Dragon Quest IX.
Really?
And I think it was actually got under development a little bit. And then when Square revealed it, the fans in Japan revolted because it was too far off a regular Dragon Quest.
Oh, interesting.
So then they kind of went in the direction that they did for IX. And then, yeah. I mean, because I think Fantasy Life was supposed to be a DS game.
Oh, okay.
And I think it just kind of got pushed back a little bit, because I think it came out in Japan in 2012.
Yeah, it looks a little, I mean, I don't want to say it looks bad, but it doesn't look, like, the character models especially look a little DS-y.
Yeah.
No.
But like that, I mean, it's fine. Like,
it's
it
charming.
Fine.
It's in a charming
and, oh, man,
way.
Okay, so not to spoil anything, but when you become master levels, they play a concert for you.
Oh my gosh.
It's like it's the best. And like, do you
in
have
every
any...
job?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Do you have any pets yet?
Oh no, but
they can go fight with you.
That's going to be the next
so
thing
I've got,
I get.
I've got two little cats. They're fighting.
Oh
with me.
Man, you can have more than one.
Yeah, I think you get
baby.
Three. I haven't gotten the third one yet. Because you get bliss, and then you can get different things. And the first thing that I got was like, well, I want a cat. And then I have two cats in real life, so I do get a second cat.
Oh my gosh. Can you name the cats?
Yes. They're named after my cats in real life.
Wow. I have to play more of this game now.
I adore Fantasy Life so much. Like, I'm probably going to get off this call and go play Fantasy Life until I go to sleep. I don't really play any other games. Like, to be completely honest.
Smash?
I'm playing out of obligation. I don't think I'd be playing it if this was just like, oh, Smash came out today. I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm fine with Fantasy Life.
That's funny.
I don't have any friends locally that have it yet, though. That would probably make it worse, because
that
would be my outlet to play Smash. Would be like, oh, I got some friends over, I'll play Smash, be sociable. If they all have Fantasy Life, I just keep on playing Fantasy Life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool. It's so good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't... It's like kind of after Shovel Knight, where I felt like all of their games were bullshit because Shovel Knight was so good.
Oh, my gosh.
But, like,
Shovel Knight.
But see, Shovel Knight ended.
It's going to be a hard...
Fantasy Life hasn't ended yet.
It's going to be a hard top five this year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Because we'll finish up after this, but I've actually been keeping a list throughout the entire year, a personal list that whenever I play a new game, I like sort it in there, and like I'll look at it every now and then and rearrange stuff.
Good man, I should do that.
A top 25 of all the games that I've played this year. It's been a bloodbath. There are games that have like gotten down to 15 that I'm like, any other year, this could be a top 5 game easily.
Yeah.
But
it's a good year. It's a really good year.
I would say that there is no dominant game this year. That's the one thing. Like, there's no game where it's like, oh yeah, that's going to be on everyone's list. Except for, I think, for a lot of us, Shovel Knight. Like,
true.
I think for a certain sect of NWR staffers, Shovel Knight is like
going to be in the top
5,
yeah.
Like, I'll be completely honest. I don't think there's a snowball chance in hell that anything dethrones Shovel Knight for me.
Yeah.
But
maybe
right
me
after
as
that,
well.
Right after that, there are at least 5 games off the top of my head that if I was like, this is my number 2 game of the year, like, I wouldn't fight that much about
it. It's going to be a fight for me between Shovel Knight and Risky.
Oh, I still haven't even played that.
Oh, dude,
that's
so
not
good.
Even on my list yet. I have a note at the bottom of my list that's like games to play. And like, I still got to play more Bravely Default. I was loving the crap out of that too. And then like Sports Friends came out this year, Towerfall.
Oh yeah.
I mean, granted that's non-Tendo, but
right,
but still,
Towerfall is so good.
Yeah. Towerfall's right, getting an expansion. But yeah, okay, really? We're not even talking about Nintendo games. All anymore. Right. thanks for listening. See y'all at PAX East.
Oh yes. That is happening.
We'll talk more. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to send us your listener mail questions and also your favorite fighting game music tracks to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and we will use them on a future segment. And if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Thanks!